this is Robert Stark. I am here today with Anthony Mickels from the Netherlands. We are going to be discussing the basic income in his article on that. Anthony, it is nice having you back on the show.
Thanks, Robert. Good to be back.
So this issue of a basic income is actually, the idea has been around for quite some time, but I've noticed it's been brought up in the news lately, and you have an interesting take on it. You support the basic income in some forms, but you also have concerns that the basic income, if it is implemented, it could be done the wrong way. Anthony, give sort of a basic overview of the history of that idea of a basic income. There's different versions of it. Obviously, one is social credit, but there's also the idea of a basic income based on taxation.
Yes, indeed. I think throughout the 20th century, there has been talk of a basic income because the wealth disparity is, of course, the main thing on people's minds, and also wage slavery, which is very perverse and forces people to work for 40 hours per week just for sustenance. And many people, you know, especially at the lower end and lower income categories, the question is how useful is it really for them and how much fulfillment is there really in work? And the problem is very clear that, you know, even in the 30s already, Keynes was saying things like in the near future, mass production will give us so much affluence that 40-hour jobs are no longer necessary, etc. And we're now in 2014, and the main threat is we're in a crunch. Our wealth is being plundered. Wealth disparity is only growing, and the promise of affluence for everybody is further away than ever. And basic income is part of the many solutions that people are promoting at the moment. But it is indeed, you can do it in a good way and in a bad way. So that's the main issue, because at the moment you have this, several narratives circulating at the moment. For one thing, the idea that we have a right to an income from the state, I think that we should really be very wary of that kind of argumentation. We don't have a right for an income. I mean, the economy is a matter of hard work and survival and basically struggle, and we don't have a right to others' income. People, if people work, and you know, that is redistributed via taxation, that is really a very Marxist way of going about these matters, and it also greatly distracts from what is the real problem, namely that our work is being plundered by the monetary system, usury, and taxation, and also by the transnationals who are all monopolies and have the high prices as a result. And this is the real issue. And if we would solve that, a basic income would basically be obsolete. It would not be necessary. So these are the main points of the article, I think.
So your big concern is that if it is successful, if there's a successful attempt to implement a basic income, that they would do it by looting what's left of the middle class, and then basically having all those people who used to be the middle class, they would get some kind of a basic income, but it would be very low, and they would basically be in poverty. That's what you could see as a potential danger from this.
Yeah, absolutely. The question is really how are we going to finance it, and if it is going to be an income tax for the middle class, then it is a very bad plan. And what I wanted to try to warn people for in this post, or try to discuss, is that, you know, the debate is being framed in many ways, and one of the ways they frame it is to say, the left say this, we'll tax the rich. And taxing the rich in reality means that you would tax wealth, so that people who own billions and even trillions, so that they would be targeted, and including their trust funds and foundations that own all their holdings in major corporations and in the land, etc. But this is not going to happen in the Marxist newspeak that is commonplace nowadays. Tax the rich means tax the middle class with income tax. And somebody who makes $100,000 per year is absolutely not rich. He's middle class and maybe upper middle class, but that's about it. He's not rich. And there is a basic misconception there with many people. For instance, if you ask a millionaire, you should never ask a millionaire what he makes. You should always ask what he's worth, his asset position, so his wealth position. That's if millionaires amongst each other, they always will discuss what their asset positions are, and their income is basically irrelevant. And this has been turned around in our topsy-turvy world, and income is now everything, and that is what everybody discusses in the public domain. But wealth is a real taboo, and taxing wealth is simply not going to happen at this stage. So if they're talking about taxing the rich, you can bet on it that it will mean just taxing people who have a decent salary.
So you would be in favor of an asset tax, and the way an asset tax works is an asset tax, I don't think it's ever been implemented, but an asset tax, they would chop the money off the very top, like the billionaires or the people worth like over 100 million. Is that what you're saying in the banks?
I would be in favor of that because, as it stands now, people who own really big fortunes have all plundered it together. I mean, okay, this may be not acceptable for everybody yet, but if you really look at it very clearly, then it's all robbed with usury and with insider trading and with monopoly and all these kind of thing. And basically, they have no right to this wealth. But what I promoted in the article, and which I think is necessary anyway, is that the basic income has also been promoted as in the past by men like Milton Friedman, for instance, who is really a mainstream economist from the Chicago School. He said he promoted a national dividend, and this is and the idea behind it is that. Land and resources are really the wealth of the nation and not the wealth of individuals. What you have now is that if somebody's lucky enough to find some oil well in his backyard, he can make a huge fortune off it. But this is not really like it should be. The national resource, the resources in the nation on the land, they should basically be national property. And the wealth that exploiting these resources generates should be redistributed to the people. And this then could be a very good way of sourcing a basic income as it is discussed nowadays, because that would actually do justice to the economic reality, which is that all the land and all the natural resources are ultimately common property and commonly held, and nobody can really own land because it's part of the commons, and the state cannot, individuals cannot. All we can do is use it, and what is being paid in rents for this usage or in market value for resources, excluding of course the costs for exploiting these resources and the land, etc. Value of the real costs must be paid by the users, but the profits of these of exploiting the commons must be shared with the people in equal shares, and that would be very similar to basic income as it stands now.
I know in the state of Alaska, they have it's a citizen's dividend, but it's pretty minuscule. But it comes from the oil revenue, but it's only a very small portion of the oil revenue that goes to the citizen's dividend in the state of Alaska. So it's certainly better than what we have here in California, where none of it, there's no citizen's dividend at all. But if you think about it, if all that oil revenue, if all the profit went to a citizen's dividend as opposed to the way it is now, that could be a very substantial amount.
Very substantial, and it would solve a great deal of other problems also, namely dependence on oil companies, etc. Because if we would implement this scheme, obviously the capitalists, that's the money power that now owns all the oil companies and all the oil wells, etc. Yeah, they would be basically out of business, and their monopoly operation would basically disintegrate. So. It would have all sorts of very positive implications, but that's also why it's still very far away, obviously.
And are you in favor of social credit? Social credit is basically a citizen's dividend, but the way it works is the money is introduced through the people as opposed to the money being taken through tax revenue.
Yeah, the essential nature of social credit is that it's just debt-free money that is being printed by the government and given to the people to spend into circulation in equal shares. And the idea of this is that there is a lack of purchasing power in the consumer base, and this is structural for many reasons. And this can be solved by simply giving people cash and so that they have the purchasing power to mop up all the production that is in there in the economy. Because what we have at the moment is that basically everybody's looking to consume more, but the demand is not there in the market simply because there's not enough money, and this is a result of the deflation in the real economy, and social credit would solve this. But having said that, it's not the best way of going forward with monetary reform. There are issues with the social credit, but this has been historically a very important proposal and still holds sway today.
So your article, you're basically talking about a proposal in the European Union, and also Switzerland has proposed a basic income. But the proposal in Switzerland is a pretty that was a pretty substantial amount. What is the specific proposal in the European Union right now?
Well, there's not one specific proposal, and it's not, I think it's bigger in Europe than it is in America. But in America, you definitely also have influential groups who propose this, or influential, relatively speaking. And there are simply many proposals. And this is why this basic income is being promoted so heavily. In England, they were $800 per person per month. Not so much a basic income, but more a guaranteed income. So people who were below that level would be compensated, but they would be given a handout. And in Europe, there is also within the European Union even. And it does seem that there is growing momentum for it. But like I said, it can be well co-opted by the. The mainstream, by the mainstream and by the powers that be. Also, because there is something decidedly egalitarian about it. Everybody the same income. Yeah, that's of course a very Marxist and very anti-nature kind of proposition. So this could very well be used by entities like the European Union or even the United Nations.
And how would they get the revenue for funding that basic income?
Yeah, exactly. I think that if you look at institutions like the EU and the UN, then you can count on it that it's going to be a very, very nasty tax that will not touch the really rich, but will definitely have a big impact on people making just a salary.
And what are your thoughts on people who say that you generally hear this argument from the American right, the mainstream conservatives? That they already say, they say basically the top wealthiest 1% pay most of the taxes. Do you think that's a lot of nonsense?
That is complete bogus. That is a really complete nonsense. If you look at avenues of all modern state, you'll see that most is gathered from the labor class basically, and the middle classes. And people like Rockefeller, etc., they pay hardly any tax. And for instance, multinational corporations hardly pay any tax, etc. What you will see is, for your income, if you make $100 million income, or even if it will be taxed, but rich don't keep the assets in the name, in trust funds and foundations and other profit entities, and these are simply not taxed, and multinational corporations aren't either, because all these bogus firms in tax paradises, like the Netherlands, for instance, but also the Bahamas. So that's it.
So with an asset tax, you would basically, if that were in it, and if it was done, you would have a tax system where the top wealthiest would pay their fair share, but it's people class or people who are, I wouldn't say not ultra wealthy, but people who are like moderately well.
Exactly. These people are equated with the capitalists, and they do so themselves also because they're very stupid. The middle class, etc., think they have more in common with the wealthy than with the laboring classes. They're really very stupid to think so, because they should align themselves with the poor, because the fight is really against the plutocracy. But the middle class is looking upwards always, and they have disdain for the poor. And the result is that the plutocracy is obviously waging war against everybody, and very much so against the middle class also. And the middle class is blind to this, and the plutocracy uses the poor and the poverty of the poor to grab the money of the middle class, and then they have the Republicans defend the middle class, so-called, because they don't really defend them. It's all, of course, complete bogus pseudo-opposition that never touches the real issues. But this is how the poor and the middle class are pitted against each other instead of uniting against the plutocracy.
Yes, they view the poor. They attack the poor as being lazy, but they defend the plutocracy. But the the plutocracy is using, they use immigration to increase the size of the underclass.
For simply for the destruction of the white race, because that is absolutely a serious issue also, and to disown the whites of their ancestral lands and subvert national purpose. So these are all parts of the mass immigration drama. But ultimately, the poor and are being scolded for being poor. But the fact is that nobody loses more to the monetary system than exactly the poor. And poverty is automatic in any usurious system. We've been discussing this in previous interviews. And the rich call the poor lazy, and the middle class call the poor lazy. But the reality is that people making money with money, they are the ones who are absolutely adding nothing to society and partying and sitting on their behinds all day, whereas the poor are working two or three jobs to just to keep things going for a very simple family. And this is the reality of capitalism and the way it is now. And this harsh talk of the lazy poor, complete bogus, and it should be directed.
One thing you also talk about is the concept of Georgism and a Georgist land tax.
Yeah.
So basically, the concept of Georgism is that the economy should be based on actual natural resources or land as opposed to credit.
Well, I have major issues with Georgism there, and I'm looking because Georgism overlooks the monetary problem, and George did not analyze money in a very real way. But the essence of Georgism and the reason why it's still popular today, and this is where George was absolutely right, is the fact that the land is part of the commons, and private ownership of land, and especially land rents, because that's where Georgism was really focused at. No reverse to a middle class family having a bit of land or a farming family, and so not for these people living for generations on that land. That is actually what we want. But what we have today is that a few people own all the land, and what they do is they rent this land. They have people pay lands for it. And this is another version of unearned income and of rent seeking, want to get rid of, and buys land in a way that does justice to the fact that all the land is ultimately commonly held, and that land rents are against natural law and against the economic interests of the great many. And that and the LVT, the land value tax that George promoted, that is aimed at retiring all the land rents via taxation. And whether this is the best way is questionable. If all this income for this redistributed to the people in an equal share, basic income or a national dividend, like, because that real justice to the fact that it is held by the state or by the groups of the wealthy, by people. And that everybody has his right to a fair share of in the commons, including the land. So that would be very positive. But if a land value tax then is used for the state, then I'm not really very much in favor of it, because then it leads to more monopolization in state hands and democracy also, which is the eternal point that I keep promoting. The state is not the answer to the plutocracy. The state is the plutocracy, and we should not be looking for more income.
So the basic income in a form of a national dividend, so it should basically be based on wealth, the commonly held wealth of the
exactly.
nation. Is that what you're
exactly.
getting at?
That's exactly it, Robert, and that would be great, and that would be actually part of the end game that we should be looking for. And would be a great part of interest-free and fair economy for all. Commonly held land, but also the resources of the land, but also a recognition of the fact that monopolize or even commercialize things like water, like sunlight, like the air we breathe, commons. Debts are being defaulted upon, and then assets are being taken. Not far off that we in Detroit already happening that poor people are being disconnected from the water supply, and this is a complete first and then to happen again. And one of the is simply redistributing all land rents via, for instance, land value tax and.
Has 90% of our income to usury, taxation, rents. And high price artificial scarcity.
That's the way it is, Robert. And, you know, people talk about the New World Order and they are in fear of being made slaves. And is we are already complete slaves. And it's a beautiful system because, you know, we can decide how we use our own time. We can decide what business we open up within the limits of the current economy then. Or we can decide to be wage slaves, etc., etc., etc. So we think we are free. But the point is, 40% of all are usually passed on by producers who incur costs for capital. So we lose 40% of our disposable income in prices. Then we lose another 20 to 25% in taxation. Some people will say it is more because it is up to 50% taxation, but this is wrong because half of taxation is usually passed on in its shop. So that's in the first 40%. That 40% for usury, 25% for taxation, 65%. Then we have this this dependence on transnational police because oil is a monopoly. Excuse me. Big pharma is a monopoly, and that's healthcare is a huge cost. Oil is a huge cost. Communications is a monopoly. All these so-called services, which are incredibly poisonous anyway, these are sold to us at very high prices, and these high prices can only exist because of their old cartels and cooperate to keep these prices high. And that's the percent that we lose. So all in all, you easily talk about 80-90% of our life force being by direct taxes. And it all goes to the very wealthy. Some of it sticks to the people executing all these schemes. So for instance, people working in banks or people working for the government. But ultimately, all the added value ends up with the very richest, and this is the real issue. And that is, I think, ultimately the basic complaint about any basic income. It is not about an income that we deserve. It is about our right, our duty even to resist slavery. And we are total as it stands now, and we're not looking for a handout. What we are looking for is the end of slavery to elites that plunder us with usury, taxation, monopoly, and rent-seeking, like you just said.
Well, Anthony Mickles, it's been a great show.
Thanks. Thanks, Robert. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for being on. That's all we have for today's show. So, Tara, and we'll be back with you next time.